That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. I am Gabriel, That Money Guy, That Money Show. It just makes sense. And we are here, I say we, it's only me in the studio. I should very much make that clear right now. But I am here to make you better with your money every single week. We get a beautiful hour that we get to spend together talking all things money, because potentially for a few of you listeners out there, this might be the first hour of financial education you've had in your entire life. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee. It's 4 o'clock on a Monday, perfect time to stick on the kettle and listen to me teach you some financial tips, some financial savvy ideas that can actually make you better with that one thing that you probably should be good with, because, you know, it pretty much affects you on a, I would say daily basis, but I'm going to go with an hourly basis. That's how the rate at which money is leaking from my bank account. Enough about that. Welcome back to the show. As per usual, if you are not new around here, you'll know what's going on. But if you are new around here, you know that we're going to dive into a bit of the news, the financial news, but not just the boring financial news, the financial news that actually affects the money in your pocket. I always like to say that, make that very clear, because the news does bore me. It's always really depressing, and it's always like, why did I read that? That was a pointless, you know, 15, 20 minutes of my life. Not here, not on That Money Show. On That Money Show, we give you the news that's actually affecting the money in your pocket. And then, of course, I always love to bring you some of the best, most incredible and knowledgeable guests within the financial industry and beyond. And this week we have Tom Allingham, the Communications Director at Save the Student. So yeah, if you are a student and you're looking to save some cash, that might be the interview that you want to stick around for. But we've also got a really interesting one, actually. Raminta Delisso, the head of gambling-related financial harm at the charity called GamCare. So we're going to be talking all things gambling and just trying to understand this absolute whirlwind of an industry that, you know, seems to be regulated and then unregulated, and then things going on here and then things going on there. To be honest, I'm one of those people that, like, have a carte blanche rule. Is that the right saying? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Don't like to gamble, full stop. Maybe a lottery ticket every 5 years or something like that, you know. Birthday, you know, something like that. But I'm not a gambler. But a lot of people are gamblers. So maybe, maybe, just maybe, that's the part of today that you want to stick around and listen to. But like I said, we start off with the news. We like to call it like the economy blitz, because we're just going to throw knowledge at you. We're going to blitz knowledge at you. I hope that sentence makes sense. And if it doesn't, it's fine. It's not an English literature show. So what's going on? What's happening in the news? Well, let's start off with renters. Put your hand up if you're a renter right now. If someone genuinely at home just put their hand up because they were a renter, brilliant. Thank you for actually taking part, because my hand went up. I'm a renter right now. Maybe not for so long. Who knows? Trying my best to look into the housing market. It's really hard. I'm going to go back and stick to the topic for like half a second. Anyway, renting. Labour are trying, or hopefully going to be bringing in, a renters' rights bill. Question mark, right? What on earth is a renters' rights bill? They are basically trying to make renting a property a little bit more secure. Right now, the rules and regulations of what renters can do, or when, more specifically in terms of what landlords are able to do to kick people out of renting their properties, it's a little bit of like a, you know, like a minefield. There's like not a lot of rules and regulations. So the Tories tried to bring this in. Then they had an election. They are no longer in power, so they can no longer bring this in. But Labour do sometimes pick up on some of the old things. Then, you know, they also had this idea themselves as well. And they want to run with it and actually make it kind of cross the line. They actually want renters to start to be protected. So what are they trying to do within this bill, I suppose? It's kind of the end of no-fault evictions. In other words, if you're doing nothing wrong, you're being a really good tenant, and all of a sudden, boom, your landlord goes, get out, just get out. That's actually something that happens, and it's way more common than people believe. Even if that's something you or someone you know about hasn't experienced that, the landlord just has a lot of power, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's their property, so they can theoretically do what they want. But you also have to understand that someone is setting up a life. You know, it's their home, it's their sanctuary, it's their safe place, even if they are renting that property. So hopefully this renter's bill makes things a little bit fairer. In other words, as long as they're, you know, being a good, you know, renter, they should have some rights to be able to push back against what a landlord can do within their powers. And that's what the bill should hopefully do. And we'll see what actually happens when it comes and whether it crosses the line or not. But hopefully it does. The one that I would personally love to see is more of a control on rental prices. I say this now, imagine like 50 years, I somehow become a landlord. I will absolutely listen back to this recording and hate myself. But I mean, there does need to be some kind of control. I don't know if anyone's been aware, lives in London recently. Rental prices are out of control. I've had friends that prices have literally gone up 15%, 20%. Mine went up about 5%. Apparently that's reasonable. It's a lot more money for me, but it is what it is. So some kind of control around that. But that's not part of this discussion. That's just something that I would love to see, to have more reasonable rent increases. But what else would this bill that they are planning to implement actually have within it? Well, number one, it says it's going to give tenants the right to request a pet, which landlords cannot unreasonably refuse. It's basically allowing you to live a normal life as a renter, because more and more of us are becoming renters rather than owners. So therefore, if you want something like a pet and it's reasonable and, you know, you're cleaning up after them, why not? What else? A ban on rental bidding wars, with landlords and letting agents legally required to publish an asking rent for their property and prevented from encouraging or accepting bids above the price. How many people have had to kind of give best and final offers on a rent on a property that you're hoping to rent? Yeah, let's get rid of that. Like, let's just, if you can pay the price the landlord wants, you get the property. Should be as simple as, probably won't be as simple as. Extending, I'm going to absolutely butcher this, but the AWAAB or AWABS law to the private rented sector, forcing landlords to fix issues like damp and mold within a specified time frame. Yeah, I think that sounds pretty fair. Luckily, I haven't had either of those situations, but I'm fairly certain if you have damp or mold, yeah, you shouldn't have to live like that for ages and ages. There should be a fixed time frame as to when that needs to be fixed. And last but not least, ending blanket bans on tenants with children or those on benefits. Didn't know this was happening, but apparently it's harder to rent a property if you are in either of those situations. Yeah, let's try and equalize, you know, make things a little bit more fair. You shouldn't get, you know, penalized for being in a position that, you know, doesn't actually affect whether you can pay the monthly rent or not. So, moving on, what else is going on in the news? Paying monthly insurance versus paying annual insurance. Should we do another hands up? I think we should. Okay, hands up if you pay your insurance annually. My hand did go up. Hands up if you pay your insurance monthly. This is car insurance, by the way, we're talking about right now. I think this is car insurance we're talking about. Yeah, it's car insurance we're talking about. Anyway, a lot of people do pay monthly, and I'm hoping you are aware, if you're a monthly payer, that you do end up paying more monthly than if you did pay it annually. If you didn't know that and you can afford to pay it annually, maybe, you know, reconsider and make sure you look into that and make a educated decision based off what you're listening to here on That Money Show. But a lot of people do pay monthly purely because of affordability reasons. Makes complete sense. You can't just, you know, pay out £500 or £600 on your car insurance in one go. You need to split this up monthly, even if it does mean you end up paying more. Completely understandable. However, because there's a huge amount actually that additionally you do pay, and I believe that paying monthly for insurance could cost some people up to £161 more, according to some research by Which. That is crazy, right? And they've actually described it as a tax on simply being poor, which is crazy and completely unethical. So there's going to be a little bit of a deep dive, a little bit of a study into whether this is fair, and to actually make sure that these insurance companies are publicly sharing the profit they're making on people that pay monthly versus people that pay annually. I think that's really fair. They should probably make the exact same amount of profit on both of them. And therefore, that kind of, I think the reward is just transparency. The more transparent these financial companies can be, the fairer life is generally. But yeah, that's a great hack, by the way. If you are listening in here and you weren't aware that paying something annually versus paying monthly makes it actually cheaper for you, then there you go. A lot of people do end up renewing their car insurance around September time. I don't know why, but I think it's the busiest month by far. So do look into paying it annually if you can afford it. You will save quite a lot of money. You know, just is what it is. I'd love to give you some other tips, but I think literally last week we did a whole thing on like car insurance and how to actually make it cheaper. It might have been 2 weeks ago. Just have a flick back through all of the previous episodes, yeah, which cheeky plug, you can get on any of your podcasting platforms. But have a little listen back, and you can find some great tips on how to save on your car insurance beyond just paying annually. And lastly, this is going to absolutely shock you, but you know what? Should we do a last hands up? Even though, again, I'm just sat here on my own. But how many of you have the majority of your money sat in cash? And by cash, I do also mean sat in something like your current account, earning no interest. Well, a lot of you are liars that didn't put your hands up, because according to, I believe, a new report by, I think it's either Barclays and the Bank of England, at least £430 billion of excess savings are currently sitting in cash. £430 billion. I wish I could be to people, let me just look after that cash for you for a bit. I'll go get my 5% interest on £430 billion. And after a year, you will never see me again. That is so much money that is literally not doing anything for you. Now, I don't know if any of you guys are aware, and there is a reason to hold things in cash, of course, you know, emergency funds and reserves and just having that bit of a safety net. But £430 billion does not need to sit in that much cash. And apparently that is amongst 13 million adults that could be earning more interest on their money. What could you be doing with that money? Well, for starters, stick it in an account with an interest rate. You can easily get above 4% right now, if not close to 5%. Some places are even offering above 5%. So I beg you, yes, keep some money in cash if you need to, if that's what makes you feel psychologically more safe with your money. But for God's sake, go and get some interest on it. The biggest excuse that those of you who are resisting my call to and my plea for you to do something with your money is probably like, I've done the maths. Sticking my money in a 4 or 5% interest rate account will get me an extra 20, 30, 40 quid a year. I'm sorry, did 20, 30, 40 quid go like, since when did 3, 40 quid ever go like unwanted? I'll do it for you then in that case. Like, I think what most people don't realize is as you save more and more money, that interest rate builds up and up. So yes, maybe it's not a huge amount today that you'll be earning by putting your money in a high interest account. But in a year or two's time, or 5 or 10 years, you'll be absolutely kicking yourself that you did not do more with your money. And I'm not even talking about investing. Investing, of course, is a great option for long-term savings. We're talking 5, 10 years and beyond that. But if that scares you and, you're not quite sure how to get into that, at the very least, please go put your money in some high interest savings account. I feel like I should make a t-shirt or start a campaign. Maybe I'll text Martin Lewis after this. Not that I have his number, but maybe we'll start a campaign to get that £430 billion actually doing something. I feel like I've just told you off like I'm a school teacher or something like that. But no, listen, you're doing all right. Just do better. Anyway, stick around, because after this, I will not be telling you off anymore. I'm actually going to be joined by Tom Allingham, the Communications Director at Save the Student. So if you are a student and you're looking to be saved, stick around.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
3 words to describe yourself.
Weird. Funny. And quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, that's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like laugh. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. It's getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You want to go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, here to help you with your money. But like I always say, if you listen to me for an hour straight, you would probably poke your eyeballs out, which is why I'm bringing in Tom Allingham right now, the Communications Director at Save the Student. So Tom, welcome to That Money Show. It's absolutely great to have you here today.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, I think this is going to be a great chat because a lot of our audience are still students, which is brilliant because it means that students are actually thinking about their money. They're listening to an entire show about, you know, That Money Show, about how to do better with their money, which is probably a good sign already. But it probably also means that they're in need of that help. They're still struggling. They're still looking for advice and tips on how to be saved as a student, if you pardon the pun and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, let's dive in straight away to who Save the Student are and what their kind of key objectives are.
Yeah. So we've been going now since, I believe, 2007. We were set up in response to the rising cost of living as a student, but it was really during the trebling of tuition fees and in 2012. And then kind of after that we really took off. And I think, you know, you and I, just the peek behind the curtain, we're having a chat a moment ago about how, you know, both of us were at university about 10 years ago. And it was not easy then, but it has got so much worse since then, particularly in England, where the maintenance loan, which, you know, as I'm sure your listeners know, that's the living cost loan you get at university. In England in particular, that has fallen so far behind inflation in recent years. So now students are in real terms substantially worse off than they were even 4 or 5 years ago, let alone when you and I went to university.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I might be being completely naive here, but I feel like when I was in uni, so to give some context to listeners, it was 2016 to 2020. So, you know, started about 10 years ago, just less than that. It felt like the majority of my kind of classmates and everyone else in uni, the norm was not to have a job. Most people were just there for uni, studying hard. And then a few people obviously had their little side gigs and were doing little things, worked in the bar, worked in the unions, all that kind of stuff. And were doing some things on the weekend, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't like the majority. It wasn't everyone. Whereas the kind of consensus I'm getting from students that I speak to today is that it's weird if you don't have a job, which is like, you're so sad because you're meant to just be a student. Part of university is enjoying being a student and having that freedom, not having to have that responsibility to earn enough to buy your groceries.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So our research shows that over half of students, I think it's in the high 50%, have a part-time job. And then there are students in addition to that who, as you say, have their own side hustles and stuff as well. And yeah, having a part-time job at uni can be a great thing. You know, it can be good on the CV. Obviously, it's nice to have a bit of extra disposable income as well. But I believe, and we believe, that there shouldn't be an expectation that you have to have a part-time job. And certainly there is also other research that suggests that if you're working over, I think it's about 17 or 18 hours a week, past that threshold is when it can start to have like a detrimental impact on your studies as well. And then, you know, as you say, even aside from the studying aspect of it, there's so much about going to university that isn't just studying and it isn't just working part-time. It should be about the new life experiences, you know, becoming independent, you know, meeting new people, experience different cultures, all of that kind of stuff. It shouldn't just be get your head in a book, work part time, and that's it.
Yeah. Instead of like thriving, it's more about surviving these days, which is kind of sad to hear. All right, so let's dive into some of the advice and tips that Save the Student does offer to students out there. Start with number one. Before we get onto the advice, what are the key challenges that students are facing today when they're starting university, obviously from a financial perspective?
Yeah, so the main one, as I say, is the fact that that maintenance loan has not been keeping up with inflation. So again, you know, you and I would be able to say that even going back pre-cost of living crisis, the maintenance loan was never really enough to live on completely in itself anyway. But if you consider now that that number has got smaller in real terms, you're now talking about, you know, less than an amount that was already not enough to live on in the first place. So that would be probably the number one main issue. Coupled with that as well, you know, you have the fact that rent, particularly in big cities like London, has been rising, you know, exponentially, you know,
yes, it
massively. Massively outstripping inflation. So if you consider that rent in some cases is higher than inflation and the maintenance loan is increasing at less than inflation, then that gap is already, you know, is pretty problematic. So that I would say is the big issue that students happen to face.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking about a bit of research done before, not by yourselves, but by someone else that estimated, and obviously double check this if you are listening, but the average annual price of going to uni outside of London currently sits at around £18,500, and in the capital it's just shy of £22,000. And I've done some quick maths, and the average maintenance loan does not cover obviously it depends on your circumstances, but does not get anywhere near that amount in real terms, or in, I suppose, absolute terms, regardless of whichever way you're looking at it. So that's really, really, really scary. And, you know, a lot of students do kind of put their hand up before they start uni. They know they're already going into debt, probably from a student loan, tuition loan I'm talking about. They're, you know, concerned about that maintenance loan. Now, if a student comes to you and they say, I need that maintenance, but like, maybe I can like you said, work part time, borrow some money from family and do all these other kind of things because I don't want to just add more like debt to myself when I leave university. What is the general kind of response from Save the Student to that query?
Our response would be, unless there is an extremely good reason, and I'm yet to hear one, you've got to take out that maintenance loan, because the repayment terms of the debt, and I'm reluctant to even use the word debt, because in so many ways, the way that student loans work, is more like a tax. Mm. Not completely, because, you know,
I say this all the time, by the way. I say this all the time. Tax versus debt, just like you mentioned. But yeah, please carry on, because it's nice to hear it from someone else.
Oh, no, I'm glad to hear that you say the same. Because, yeah, so it's not entirely like a tax, in the sense that if you do, by some miracle, manage to clear your debt in its entirety, then, yes, you will stop repaying it. But it's not like a debt in the sense that it doesn't affect your credit score. You stop repaying if you're ever earning under a salary, under a certain threshold, rather. You only repay 9% of your earnings over a certain threshold. So in all of these aspects, it works so much more like a tax. And then what you have to kind of bear in mind as a result of that is that, you know, you sometimes hear people on social media or in the news or whatever saying, you know, oh, I'm having to repay £300, £400, £500 a month or something. What they don't tell you is that the reason they're paying £300, £400, £500 a month is because they're earning in the high tens of thousands. And they can, to put it bluntly, afford to part with that kind of money.
Yes.
Now, if you're earning £26,000, £27,000, £28,000 and you're on the Plan 5, which is a new student loan, you'd only be repaying 9% of that tiny fraction that you're earning over £25,000 a year. Now, I should say, Save the Student, we are opposed to tuition fees. We do believe they should be abolished. And we do think that the student loan repayment system could have improvements made to it. But all of that being said, the system as it is, even with the kind of regressive changes that have been made to it, is still broadly speaking quite manageable. Mm-hmm. So if you can get an extra, let's say, for example, £6,000 or £7,000 a year from the government in maintenance loan each year, and that will ease the burden on you and ease the burden potentially on your parents as well, then absolutely take that money.
Yeah. And I feel like it's worth reiterating, like you said, how student loans actually work. It's 9% on the new plan, 9% above £25,000 a year. So if you don't earn £25,000 a year, you do not pay a penny back in exactly. your student loan. Obviously, optionally, you can do what you want, but you won't be forced to. And then I believe the new interest rate is now just in line with is it CPI or RPI? One of the two.
RPI.
Yeah. There you go. So technically, in real terms, your debt isn't actually going up. It's just going up with inflation, more or less. So like you said, don't be so scared by the loan. Of course, university is becoming a bit more of a question mark. If there is a vocation that you're really going after and requires university, don't let the loan put you off. Of course, if there's something else, maybe there's an apprenticeship or other options, definitely consider them. I definitely know that I would. But don't let the loan be the reason that you say, I'm not going to uni. Make sure there's an actual hardcore reason behind it. Going back to Save the Student, obviously, like you said, it's filled with advice for students on how to actually, you know, get through the financial side of being within university. But what are some of like the top things that most students don't consider that could literally, you know, be the key towards them enjoying university versus them, like we said before, surviving university?
So, yeah, so I think the biggest one, and I know a moment ago you were talking about money being left in bank accounts, it would be picking the right student bank account. Our research shows that students overwhelmingly choose a bank account either because of the freebies with it, or they stick with the account that they're already with, or maybe they go with a recommendation from family or friends or whatever. Only a small percentage, I think off the top of my head, it's about 8%, go for the one based on the 0% overdraft. But in our opinion, having worked on this stuff for, you know, over 15 years now, that is by far the most important factor that any student should consider when they're looking at a student bank account, because that 0% overdraft, which in some cases is as much as £3,000, that could be the difference between you being able to stay at university or not, because that is an emergency buffer of cash that is so easily accessible and so safe to access. And just as a kind of heads up to anyone who doesn't know, when you graduate, all student bank accounts become graduate bank accounts. So even after you've left university, you'll have an extra 1, 2, maybe even 3 years to repay that money. So choosing a bank account, which might have, for instance, an extra £1,000 of interest-free overdraft in it, as opposed to, let's say, a £100 shopping voucher, that overdraft is by far the most useful thing that you get your hands on. I think that is the starting point of any good kind of relationship with money at university.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that you're, to clarify, you're not recommending students to go into their overdraft. An overdraft should be avoided as much as you possibly can, because it's a very bad habit. But obviously, being a student, this is the first time you're having to handle money on your own, and it's probably when you're most vulnerable and likely to enter an overdraft in the first place. And like you said, the fees that are associated with overdrafts in accounts that aren't free or 0% overdrafts will absolutely wipe out that rail card. I'm sorry, they just went. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They will absolutely wipe out that £50 bonus that you got from wherever it was to move into that account. So I could not agree with you more. I do not know a single kind of friend or anyone that went to university that did not go into their overdraft at some point. So that's invaluable advice. Just like before we end, I'd also like to kind of hear your opinion on students that are looking for work and the best ways that they can go about looking for something that's flexible and actually balances, you know, out work, but also being able to appreciate and take advantage of being at uni.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I would say is, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, I'm going to need a part-time job this year, I would say apply now, because people are going into Freshers Week this week or next week maybe. So you want to get in early, particularly with Christmas jobs and stuff like that. You want to get in early, get your application in, and hopefully you can secure a job. Other than that, you know, obviously traditional part-time jobs can be a good source of income, but not necessarily always the most flexible. So I would encourage you to look to kind of more side hustle-y type things. So you can do lots of things. Like examples I always bring up would be like pet sitting, for instance, where you can essentially do that on your own terms.
I do that. I'm not even a student.
There you go. Perfect. There you go. I mean, you know, you're taking business away from them, but
their students don't live where I live.
But there you go. You can testify to the fact that obviously your customers will say, I need you to do X, Y, and Z, but it is also within your power to say, I can't do this. You know, I've got an essay to do this day. So you can essentially manage your own hours to a certain extent. There's also becoming an, you know, this is maybe slightly more niche, but becoming an extra in TV and film, doesn't require any experience, but pays upwards of £80-90 a day. And obviously at the end of it, you potentially get to be in a film or a TV show or something. I mean, those are just two examples, but I would really just kind of encourage that mindset of looking beyond working in a bar or working in a shop and looking towards slightly more flexible jobs that still pay a decent amount.
I like it. And they look good on your CV as well. Exactly. Lastly, where can people find out some more information if they've been intrigued by this conversation?
Yes, hopefully they have. And if so, we are at SaveTheStudent.org and we are at SaveTheStudent on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, everything else.
All right, wicked. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm sure there was a few gems in there for people to take away.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Cheers. All right, there you go. If you are a student, you know where you should be going right now. Save the Student. Go on there, download some information, because that was just a sneak peek of what you could understand and what you could learn to how to handle, I guess, student life to the maximum. Money tip of the week. I always love to give you money tip of the week. We're going to actually lean a little bit away from being a student, but to be honest, it might apply. And it's quite an interesting one. I was having a debate the other day with someone about whether or not they should get a cleaner for their property. And I asked them about whether they'd considered the time cost. And they went, huh? What's time cost? So I'm going to explain it here. It's a bit more of a psychological tip of this week, but I think it's an important one. And it's something that you should bear in mind. So I said to them, how long would it take you to clean your house? And they said, you know what? Probably all day Saturday. And I said, okay, so that's an entire day. How much would it cost you if you were, let's say, to do a side hustle or work a bit on that day instead? Oh, I could make, you know, double the amount that I'd spend on a cleaner. So I said, well, if you do like the maths of all of it, isn't it so much more worth it for you to invest your time into that than to actually do the cleaning yourself? A, you do something you enjoy, build up a skill, build up a side hustle. And ultimately, if you do the maths, you're making more money that you can actually then go and spend on the cleaner. Now, okay, forget the cleaner just for a second. The whole idea of what I want you to do with this exercise is to work out your time value. What's your actually hourly rate that you would kind of reinvest back into yourself? Let's say in a job you're earning, I don't know, 20, 30 pounds an hour. Let's make it up. Maybe you say, out in my free time, my time value is 10 pounds an hour. Now, if there's ever anything you don't want to do in life and you can outsource it for less than 10 pounds an hour, you should always consider making that decision. Because let's say you find a cleaner for, I don't know, 10 pounds an hour. I know that should probably be more there, but let's make it up. Maybe it's worth outsourcing that so you can spend more time with your friends and your family, because that's the time value that you are putting, you know, onto your own personal self. So yeah, just something to tickle your brain for a while. I hope that's made sense. If not, do just quick Google of time value of money and all that kind of stuff. And it's an interesting you know, psychological financial topic of discussion. Well, that's it for this part, but stick around, because straight after this break, I'm being joined by Raminta Deliso, the head of gambling-related financial harm at the charity GamCare. It's going to be a great conversation.
Fubar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, do you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey. You know what I mean?
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out!
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touch and base.
Yeah.
And there's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show. I am Gabriel, That Money Guy. Hopefully you know it by now. You've been listening to enough of the show this afternoon, this Monday afternoon. And I did kind of tell you just before the break that we're going to have a very interesting conversation, but I want to contextualize it briefly. So there was a recent poll by Radio 4 that said that two-thirds of people who called the National Gambling Helpline had gambling-related debt. That is a really scary, scary statistic. And of course, this is my area of expertise, which is why I'm joined by Raminta Deliso, the head of the gambling-related financial harm at the charity GamCare. So, Raminta, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for joining us. Like I said, this is going to be a really interesting conversation because I feel like I'm just hearing more and more of kind of my friends and my associates and colleagues and all that kind of stuff are kind of dabbling in the gambling world a bit socially. You know, it feels like just a harmless bit of fun. It adds to, you know, a sports weekend to try and, you know, do some stuff here or there. And I think this is a really important conversation for people to listen to, whether they like it or not. You are forced now, if you are listening, you have to stick around to listen to this conversation, just so they kind of are aware of the risks involved and what they can do off the back of it. So I would kind of love you to introduce yourself and also to kind of just introduce the charity that you work for and understand some of the work that you're doing with the world of gambling.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for inviting me and giving us an opportunity to discuss that free help and support that is available through GamCare. So GamCare is a national charity and we help and support anyone who has been affected by gambling harms, whether it's the gambler or anyone around them, family members and friends. And I head up gambling-related financial harm project at GamCare, which it really aims to raise awareness about gambling harms across the financial services sector and the debt advice sector. So some of the stats that you just cited a minute ago. So about two-thirds of people contacting the National Gambling Helpline, and the National Gambling Helpline is run by GamCare. So two-thirds of the people contacting us say they are experiencing gambling-related debt. And about 73% experience financial difficulties. So they may not be in debt yet, but they're already struggling with finances because they're gambling as well. So I think that just goes to show that gambling can escalate really quickly. So many people obviously gamble without any issues at all, but it's just important to keep an eye on how much you're spending on gambling.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, you guys have the data and the research of what's going on in the background. What are the key reasons behind this rise in numbers that we're starting to see? Is it just becoming too easy to gamble at the moment?
Well, access to gambling is, you know, really easy these days. People gamble on apps on their phones. You know, you can previously you had to go into a betting shop or into a casino during their opening hours. Now people gamble 24/7. So, yes, access to gambling is kind of one of the key reasons. But also we hear from many people who have been affected by the cost of living crisis. So maybe they're thinking that gambling is a way to make that extra money, but very often that is not the case. And we always say gambling is not the answer to your money worries.
Absolutely. Like they say in Vegas, the house always wins, right? The house always wins at the end of the day. So what are the kind of key gambling activities that you are seeing? Like what areas? So obviously, gambling can spread wide and far. There are so many different ways of doing it, getting into it, casual, formal. Some people even describe themselves as professional gamblers. So what are the key ones that you're seeing, especially when it comes to debt-related inquiries?
So one of the main is obviously sports betting, but we also hear from a lot of people who play slots. Many people, bet on the Grand National. And like I said, very often it's not a problem. But it's when you start chasing losses, when you continue to gamble, even after significant financial losses, that can become problematic. And like I said, that access, that 24-hour access to gambling can really escalate things for you. We also hear from people who even go to bingo halls or play national lotteries. So you think that those activities may be harmless, but they can be problematic as well. And one of the newer trends is that we hear from people who have been affected by, for example, cryptocurrency investments. So you may not see crypto or other types of volatile investments as a gambling activity. But again, when people start chasing losses, maybe they are starting to invest the money they don't have. Maybe they borrow money to invest. That can become problematic. And we see very similar, what we call harms, that are reported by people who have been affected by gambling. So maybe you're just on your crypto app all the time. So, you know, you're all consumed by that gambling activity or that investment activity. That's one of the red flags to look out for. Are you missing out on your social life, your family celebrations, for example, because you prefer to gamble or spend that time investing?
Super interesting. And I love that you said this. I mean, I don't love, but it's so interesting to hear that range of different things, but that people probably wouldn't even assume that they are gambling. You know, they do a lottery every so often, or they're trying to dabble in crypto. And that these are actually things that you're starting to hear as gambling related debt. So these are really good conversations to have, because someone's listening going, oh, maybe I do have a problem or something like that. What, and you started to kind of dabble in some of the psychological traits or actual traits, physical traits that people start to take on when they might become addicted to gambling without even realizing it. So like you mentioned, missing social events or family events because they would rather, you know, do something or watch a sporting event that they've put a large amount of money on. What other signs can people keep an eye out for or should be aware of?
Yeah, so we call gambling a hidden addiction because it can go on undetected for, you know, many, many years. And when we hear from people, you know, very often they would say, I've gambled for decades and no one knew about it. And so, like I said, it's really important to keep an eye out for those red flags. So perhaps you have mortgage or rent arrears or unpaid bills because you've spent your income, all that money on gambling. Very often people would gamble just after they get paid and they have absolutely no money left in their bank account for food and other expenses. We hear from people who are selling possessions or they're borrowing money to gamble. They would exhaust all lines of credit. So even accessing things like payday loans or going to loan sharks to borrow money so they can continue gambling. Maybe using that credit to cover everyday living expenses as well. So not just using credit for gambling, but using credit for everyday living expenses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, this is super interesting. And hopefully, again, like I've said, someone can recognize maybe a characteristic you've just described and understand maybe it's time to actually go out and look for help. So when they do go out and look for help, these people, and obviously they can approach your services to try and assist them in getting over, like you mentioned, this secret addiction. What are some of the long-term solutions? Because it can't just be a quick fix, right? And this is actually something within someone's psyche now. What are some of the ways that you help people get over this problem?
Yeah, so just thinking about gambling debts and your gambling issues. So it might be tempting to address your financial problems first and address the debt rather than gambling. But we always say, if gambling is a root cause of your debt, then address gambling first. Because if you, even if you get debt advice or you set up a repayment plan with your creditors, it's, you know, you're not going to really stick to it, because if you're still gambling and your gambling might escalate, you won't stick to it. So get help about gambling first. We operate the National Gambling Helpline, and you can get free help and advice. And you can ring us any time of the day. We open 24/7. The number is 0808 80 20133, or you can chat to us on gamcat.org.uk. There are also some great practical tools that can restrict access to gambling websites. For example, Gamban is a software that provides, it's a software that blocks access to all gambling websites and gambling apps across all your devices. And we can give you a free license for the software as well on the helpline. You can self-exclude yourself from gambling websites through something called GamStop. So you can say, I want to self-exclude myself for 6 months or a year, up to 5 years. You can also ask your bank to block gambling transactions, and that is quite common now. Most retail banks in the UK offer an option to block gambling payments. And we can also refer you into a trained practitioner. So when you call the helpline, you can ask for a referral into gambling support and treatment. And that is free. It's confidential. So, yeah, make sure you get all the support that is available out there. And I think we're really lucky in the UK because all of that is accessible and is free.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, you've said so many things, from like quick practical tips that people can actually implement right now, whether it's that app that blocks people from doing it or calling up your bank, to, like you mentioned, the actual psychological side that you can assist with going a bit further down the line. And I think it is really important to say that, okay, you might be in debt and think that fixing the debt is fixing the problem, but ultimately, if you don't fix what caused the debt in the first place, you will just go back into debt, whether you can get out of it and go back in it. And it's a bit like a yo-yo, you know, and you're in it, you're out of it, you're in it, you're out of it. But you need to really kind of nip it from the source, more or less. And I think that's a really good piece of advice. If someone is listening to this, and maybe they do recognize some of the things that you are describing, but it's kind of tough to open up and actually share that with someone or admit that you're at fault, what would you say to someone that's struggling to, you know, pick up the phone and call yourselves to get some help?
That's absolutely understandable. It can be really daunting. And I, like I said, people wait for years and years to get that help and support. Maybe talk to a friend or a family member, anyone you trust, and just open up. You know, as they say, a problem shared is a problem halved. So, yeah, that first step is to speak to someone. And then our helpline, our chat is anonymous. You may not feel like talking to someone on the phone. You can access web chat. You can contact us through WhatsApp as well. So get that help and support anonymously. But also use those tools. You don't need to speak to anyone to use Gamban and GamStop. So put those tools in place, put the bank blocks in place, and then maybe you'll have the courage to speak to someone. I have lots of wonderful colleagues on the helpline and in our treatment services who are waiting for people to get in touch, and they won't judge you. They will support you.
All right. Wicked. I mean, that's such good advice. And I love that. And I think it should be stressed that you can go obviously down the friends and family route and seek support from them. But if that's even more uncomfortable to you, this is fully anonymous. You don't have to pick up the phone. Yeah, like, who wants to call someone these days? That's horrible. Just, you can go on the web chat, like you said, WhatsApp. So honestly, thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully, like we said, we can make that difference to one person listening today that recognizes that problem and is able to turn their life around thanks to just listening to one conversation on That Money Show.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me today.
Cheers now. All right. Well, there you have it. I know that sounded a little bit more, I suppose, serious and solemn, but it's a really important one here on That Money Show, that We cater for all different kinds of financial responsibilities. And ultimately, we are that money show. We are here to help you support you with money. And gambling is becoming more and more common and easier to do. So sometimes, yes, sometimes it's not all fun and games on the show. We have to sit down and have a serious conversation with you about getting things back under control. So hopefully, if that is something that you recognize or you felt a little bit uncomfortable potentially listening to that conversation, it might be worth just going over to GamCare, to the Gambling National Helpline and all that kind of stuff. Starting to look into some ways that you can be supported, because that shouldn't be uncomfortable to listen to if you don't have a problem. All right, let's answer some of your questions. We always save time at the end of the show. I'm making it a bit more lighthearted again. You know, the voice has gone a bit more high pitch again to answer some of your questions. Now, to remind you, you can DM us on Instagram at That Money Show. That's at That Money Show. I don't know why I have to say it twice. It's literally the name of the show. You can come in, you can ping us your questions, and we will try and respond to as many as we can every single week. And we've got a few in today. So thank you to Theo and Kai, who I'm going to pick on today for their questions. Let's have a little read. Theo's come in with, my girlfriend and I have just had a child, and we want to start putting some money aside in savings. Any advice? Now, I'm going to assume that savings for your child. If it's not, I'm apologizing in advance because I'm going to completely misanswer this question. But obviously having a child is a really exciting time, but it's also a huge opportunity to set your child up well financially for their future, because of the time that you've kind of got until they actually need to access those savings. So there's a few products that I would ask you to look into. Number one is a junior stocks and shares ISA. So yes, this is investing. This isn't investing advice. This is just making you aware of the products and tools that exist. A junior stocks and shares ISA allows people under the age of 18 to actually invest some money. Now, why would you want to invest rather than save for a newborn child? Well, one key way to mitigating risk within investing, in other words, making it less risky for yourself, is to increase the time span that someone invests over. Now, I don't know about you, but 18 years from 0 to 18 when they can access that money, and probably beyond before they actually need to touch that money, it's quite a long time span. Common practice within kind of financial education areas is that you should invest money for at least 5, if not 10 years. You've got 18 here, so that's a great place to start. And I would do a quick Google, best junior ISA platforms. That's junior stocks and shares ISA. And why in an ISA and not a general investing account? Because in an ISA, you do not pay tax on the interest that you earn. And we will, if you can pay less tax, you should. Don't pay tax optionally here, people. Pay the tax you have to pay. And that's kind of it. So that's that. And then the other thing that you can look into, now this is going to sound really strange, is you can start making pension contributions for newborns. Anyone can have a pension contribution. You don't have to be working. Now, why might you want to consider a pension contribution? Well, again, they will only be able to access the money upon, well, right now it's 55, but it might be a bit older, you know, by the time they reach their pension. But you do still get that pension top up that you would get if you were an employee. So if you are a basic rate taxpayer, you still go and, or anyone, you still get that 20% top up from the government when you contribute towards your pension. So if you want a little bit of an extra top up on top of obviously the money that you're contributing towards a newborn, a pension might be the way to go. And trust me, they will thank you a lot by the time they reach pension age and they realize you've been putting money into a pension for them, because that money with the compound interesting effect is going to, well, not guaranteed, no results are actually guaranteed, but with that length of time horizon, let's just say history says it's a great decision. But you know, history doesn't prove future results and all that kind of stuff, but you know, just look into it. Anyway, a last question from Kai has asked, what is the difference between APR and interest rates? Really good question. And I think that a lot of people sometimes shy away from this question to ask the difference between APR and interest rates because they think that they should know it by now. Trust me, I still Google these all the time because I just have to double check my answer. But okay, an interest rate is the percentage that they say they're going to charge on top of, like, let's say you're borrowing money at a certain interest rate. That's what they're going to charge you if you miss a payment or if you borrow money and you have to pay it back every single month, all that kind of stuff. So on a credit card, there's an interest payment. So why do they also need an APR? Now, an APR is the total interest that you will pay if you include things like extra fees, unknown payments, etc., etc. So there are often other things that you will owe them extra money for beyond just the interest rate that they are charging you. And this is kind of all mushed together into one number called the APR. So usually your APR should be higher than the interest rate, okay? So to give you an example, if you have a credit card and that credit card has an annual fee, the annual fee is kind of accumulated within the APR along with the interest rate. So annual fee and interest rate together make your APR. So always make sure you check both numbers. They're both really, really fundamental for you to know if you are going to be borrowing any kinds of money. And we did have a question from someone watching the live stream as well, who simply said, what's the best stocks and crypto to invest in, would you say, to nearly guarantee money? I am not a financial advisor. There is absolutely nothing that can guarantee money in that answer. There are tools and practices you can use. But if you want guaranteed money, get a job and earn a salary, because ultimately that's all there is. What you can do is look to use things like diversification and length of time to start to try and, you know, put yourselves in the right positions. But unfortunately, if I knew something could guarantee you money, I'd be doing it myself. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. So I want to say thank you to our guests that joined us today. I would also, hopefully you enjoyed the news as well. And remember, you can listen back on any platform you get your podcasts on, or download the Foobar Radio app and listen to us live every single week. We are at That Money Show on all socials. I've been Gabriel. This is That Money Show. I'm That Money Guy. And you are now officially better with your money. See you next week.